Franchised is presented by FakeShep.net with support from MResell. If you're looking to buy an iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or any other Apple product, visit MResell today. They offer refurbished, top-of-the-line, and next-to-new Apple products at a fraction of the regular price. And if you're looking to sell an Apple product, they'll buy them off you too. Visit MResell.com.au.
Candyman was released in 1992 to moderately positive acclaim, and it would go on to earn itself a cult following on its home entertainment release on VHS. Starring Virginia Madsen and Tony Todd, directed by Bernard Rose, the film is adapted from a short story called The Forbidden by author Clive Barker, which was one of the entries in his notorious Books of Blood. You're listening to Franchise, presented by FakeShemp.net. G'day, my name is Glenn, and I'll be hosting this gnarly episode where we look back on the Candyman series from Barker's original story through to the universally panned third film of the franchise. And with me, as always, is Jarrett and Sean. So stick around and dare to say his name five times. Candyman, 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 can you believe the weather outside? There's no fucking way I'm saying that five times.
Well, I think I have a fresh.
What the fuck is a frush?
Farewell, dear shithead.
The Libyans!
No fucking shit, lady! Do I sound like I'm wearing a piece of shit?
Lick my plate, you dog shit!
Sweets to the sweets. I never understood that line. Sweets to the sweets.
Yeah.
Squeaks.
In the second one, it's just really uncomfortable when the woman says it because I'm like, oh, I don't buy it at all.
It's an
so the delivery is really odd, and I'm like,
what creepy. Does it mean, Sean? You brought this sweets franchise to the table.
Yeah, I don't know. Sweets to the sweet. I don't know. I always thought it's some connotation to the honey that they the smeared on his wound.
Mm, well, it definitely does. But
yeah, but then outside of that, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, we've started this one off with authority, I say. Yeah. Jarrett, how you going?
Yeah, what a way to kick it in. Yeah. Great, man. Yourself?
Good. Sean, how's it going?
Very well.
You did bring this franchise to the table. Why?
Mostly because Candyman, from my money, is probably the most scary film of the 90s, I think. I think Candyman's terrifying.
It's very scary.
Like, it's one of those ones, like, I legitimately struggle to watch it by myself in a dark room. Like, I really do, and I don't know what it is. And I think it's this perfect amalgam of everything. It's got, you know, it's got that Philip Glass score. It's got that, you know, the idea of ghost and legacy that we don't quite understand. But then the story of Candyman itself is, it's more than just a fright tale. Like, it's about something, yeah? It's about gentrification. It's about legacy of violence. It's about heritage. It's about all these things. It's richer than just the scares that are on screen. So therefore, it penetrates that layer of skin just a little deeper than the average
Let's
horror film.
Let's backtrack it. So, Candyman is 1992.
Correct.
Directed by Bernard Rose, starring Virginia Madsen and Tony Todd. I'm going to give a bit of a synopsis. We'll assume that most people listening to this are probably fans already. But if you've never seen it, Madsen plays Helen, a college graduate, writing a thesis on urban legends. Along with her best friend, she investigates the story of the Candyman, who is the son of a slave who was brutally tortured and murdered, and whose spirit haunts a derelict building in the projects, which was built on the spot where he was killed. So when people speak his name five times into a mirror, he will appear and reap bloody vengeance. So this is a film based on a short story by Clive Barker, the legend behind Hellraiser and Nightbreed, amongst others. Have you read the original story?
Do you know, I have, but I read it such a long time ago. I've read just about everything Clive Barker does. There's a couple exceptions. But Books of Blood was, like most people, I'm sure, who get into Clive Barker, that's the way that most people get in, those kind of bite-sized chomps, you know.
Yep.
If you don't like 20 pages, you're not going to like a 600-page novel.
Exactly,
kind of.
And this is a very short story. This is I read it leading into this podcast again.
Yeah, it's from memory, it's about 70 pages or something.
Oh, I didn't count how many pages it was, but it was very short because I remember reading it thinking, right, we've just gotten into the story and it ends.
Yeah.
Like, there
it's very different because it's set in Liverpool,
it's a Liverpool, Liverpool setting. I've got some notes here, but I was surprised. Nothing about even her character is different.
Yeah,
she's not writing a thesis or anything like that. She's just taking photographs of graffiti, you know, for her own little article that she's writing. And she's blamed for the crimes, like in the film. But actually, no, she isn't blamed for the crimes in the books. There's none of that which is in the films.
It doesn't get that far, does it?
No, it doesn't. You know, but she does die. So, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
So, Jarrett, tell us your thoughts on Candyman. I'm going to throw you the question that you always throw us. Where were you the first time you saw it?
I saw it on video. I wanted to see it theatrically. I think it came out about 93 here in Australia. Yeah, it did actually, because I remember I was in manual shop class, you know, shop class, manual arts.
Oh, is that woodwork or something?
Yeah, I used to talk to a chap there about the late show, like what happened on the late show on the weekend, we'd have a laugh. And I remember when Candyman was coming out, I was super excited, and he was about the only bloke that would probably go and see it with me. His parents wouldn't let him go. I'm like, dude, it's only M. Like, it's only M. You can just go and see
it. That was before MA, wasn't it? So yeah, it was. M was really extreme sometimes.
Like about a year before the MA rating kicked in.
And that was a thing that you guys lucked out on living in Australia, because Candyman was a solid 18. R rating, an 18 in the UK. And for love nor money, there was no way in God's green earth a 9-year-old was going to get to see this film.
Yeah.
And I didn't actually end up seeing it until I got to Australia a couple of years later.
Having said that, it wasn't cut for our release. It was just an M rating.
No, we just got an M. I think it was just looser censorship there in that.
Yeah. And it wasn't quite enough to push it to our definition of R.
Exactly. Yeah. So, video was the first way I got to see it, and I was super, super psyched for it. And, I watched it with my parents. I dug it. You know, I enjoyed it. And it was kind of weird, though, because it was almost that gateway horror film for a lot of other kids that I went to school with who saw it on video or would see it, like, when it hit weekly and would talk about Candyman, scariest film I've ever seen. Have you seen Candyman?
Like, have you said it five times?
Yeah, there's, so many other horror movies. Why are you talking about Candyman? It's like, because that was the film that a lot of these 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds my age we're just seeing.
And I think that was half of the allure for them, was that participation factor. Like, can you say his name five times? Like, because that was part of the marketing as well, I think, from memory.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yeah, which is... I think it's a real stretch to call this one a slasher, even though sort of it is defined as a slasher. I think it's much more like that surrealistic European style of horror. It's very
Gento-esque. It feels very British, you know, and I think that's...
It does,
And I think that's probably because of Bernard Rose. You know, Bernard Rose is obviously... He's bringing a British sensibility to an American story. But where were you, Glenn, when you first saw it?
It was home video, but I don't particularly have memories of when I first saw it. I remember that conversation I had with mates at school. I always thought it was dumb that they would say, can you say his name five times? Like, it's a fucking movie, for God's sake, guys. Of course, like, come off it. I'm switched on to movies, guys. But, I remember that frenzy around the bloody playground, this movie. And
they must have been advertising it hard on TV, I reckon. Because for these kids to be able to have, you know, Candyman, I know about that.
And what kids are like too? It's where they all say they've seen it, but none of them have.
Totally.
One of them has, and they've told a mate, so they can kind of, you know, Chinese whisper the story along to each other.
Of course.
That was so much fun doing that when you're a kid.
I loved hearing variants of films that I knew well. People that claimed to have seen them.
I'm sure I even made up stories about seen movies that I hadn't back in those days, you know, just to,
for sure.
Just to fit in, man.
Yeah, for sure. Just to be a little cooler than I was.
I might have.
But it would have been like, I totally saw that Disney movie. Yeah, I remember that one. Like, no, I didn't. Actually, I didn't. I denied that there was a film called The Black Hole. I was like, someone told me about The Black Hole. I was like, there's no Disney film called The Black Hole. You're talking about an asshole. And they're like, no, The Black Hole. And I'm like, no. And then they explained to me. I was like, that Disney would never make a movie that dark. And then I was like, looked it up. I was like, so they did. This was like, I was about 8 or something. I should check that out.
I was thinking about that the other day. How did we look up films before IMDb?
Cinemania in the 90s.
Cinemania
in the 90s. Yeah. Prior to that, it was a task. You needed one of those, like, 1,000 films you need to see before you die.
The Leonard Maltin ones, those were the ones I used to use.
That was about it. And Cinemania. Visiting the library.
Yeah. Cinemania was that CD-ROM, right?
Yeah, CD-ROM.
Yeah.
And I remember that's the first time I saw things like Diner. I mean, a movie like Diner, they had, you go to certain, clips of movies, but they were like really poor resolution.
Oh my god, they would be so bad. Imagine looking at them now, because back then you're like, oh, it's video. Look at this amazing video clip.
Just waiting for 3 hours for a 20-second clip to load.
Crazy.
Anyway, massive digression. Back to Candyman. Clive Barker worked very closely on this story with Bernard Rose to flesh it out, and it was mutually agreed between the two of them that they would relocate it. And Barker apparently was very, very happy with the change to Chicago, which is cool. Mm. I guess there's a bigger market in it for it anyway. But, you know, if you go to Clive Barker's website and you click on any project he has had affiliation with, whether it's, you know, just based on work he's done or whether he's directly involved, there is, like, endless quotes of him with opinions on it.
Really?
Oh,
which
wow.
is awesome. So you go there and look up, say, Hellraiser Revelations, and you get all the things he said about it. Yeah. So I got a quote.
So he's actually watched these films that are like extensions of...
Either he has watched it or leading up to them, he's had journalists say, oh, what do you think about the upcoming... Right. You know, right. And he will... You know, that's where some of these famous quotes where he says, you know, this didn't come from my asshole.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Instead of Revelations.
Yeah. Revelations, yeah.
Yeah, so all that kind of stuff is there, which is fascinating, you know. So definitely encourage people to go to his website. But,
very cool.
He called... Candyman a tremendous piece of work and said of Bernard Rose, I trusted him on the basis of Paper House, which is the previous film he had written, which is one of my favourites.
It is an incredible,
fantastic. Yeah. And he said that it was just a really, really very intelligent movie, and that is what he wanted applied to Candyman. So it worked.
And it does. And again, coming back to why I think it works is because it is smarter than the average horror film for the most part. And it doesn't rely, like you said, on the slasher techniques, even though Candyman himself is now considered one of those slasher icons. He's up there with Pinhead and Chucky and all those kind of things. He's not a slasher. You know, it's a film, I think, and this might be a little grandiose, but I firmly believe it. It's a film more in line with The Exorcist than it is with something like Freddy Krueger, because it's deeper than the surface story would have you believe. It's richer in character. It's richer in theme. It's richer in its aesthetic. It's way classier directed. Like,
I feel like it's almost somewhere in the middle of those two films.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it has a very distinct look. And like you mentioned, was it Philip Glass that did the score? Like a very standout score. It's incredible. Like, it stays with you.
Beautiful.
It's one of those
score.
It highlights that really definition, the difference between film and movie.
I agree.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
I think anyway, And what would it have been had Eddie Murphy been cast? He was originally...
Yeah. Are you serious?
He was originally considered...
He was in contention for the role.
For the role of Tony Todd,
Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
And he was too expensive, and that's the only reason they didn't cast
Eddie
him.
Eddie Murphy would have been coming off the back of, like, The Distinguished Gentleman or something like that. So, I mean, he hadn't
Boomerang.
Really, you know, yeah, absolutely. It was that era.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's not like he even had stepped out and done something really different or crazy. He wouldn't have done even Vampire in Brooklyn yet.
No.
Yeah.
So that's just crazy. It would have worked.
When was the Fisher King with Robin Williams?
I think
Williams.
It was like 93.
Yeah.
Oh, so 93. It was around the same time.
Yeah.
So probably wasn't that far of a... You know, having Robin Williams show up in The Fisher King was a little bit of a casting coup as well. So maybe it was the time for that
flavor.
Yeah, it was the flavor of the month kind of thing.
Building, because he did had Dead Poets Society a few years earlier.
No, that's true. He did.
Comedy, but he had done drama, even with Good Morning Vietnam. Whereas Eddie Murphy, outside of maybe another 48 hours and... Which was probably the most recent sort of semi-serious kind of comedy.
But still very
action,
comedy.
Still
comedy.
Very comic,
I don't think, I don't know if it would have ever worked. Has he since done anything?
Dramatic.
Dramatic.
He did the one...
Dreamgirls?
Yes.
Where he chucked a wobbly at the Oscars because he... Did you hear about this? He chucked a wobbly at the Oscars because somebody else... I can't remember who won over him.
It wasn't, what's her name, Taylor...
would have been a guy.
Eddie Murphy is on record saying that he thinks he should have deserved a nod for it, for his work in Dreamgirls, and he went gangbusters over that one. Anyway, keep going.
Well, there you go. So he did that movie. I didn't see it.
Yeah.
Damn it.
And what about the controversy that surrounded this film? Did you read up on any of that?
No.
I started reading up on things, and I thought, oh, maybe I'll just leave it for the podcast.
Yes, well, apparently there was a lot of anger in the community about it being a black man and a slave, you know, because his backstory is very slave-based.
Yeah.
And there's a few quotes which I thought were quite amusing. Many people, including Virginia Madsen, were concerned about the film's depiction of African-American community in general, and particularly having the black man play Candyman. And she said that, I don't think Spike Lee will enjoy this movie, which at that time, Spike Lee was really getting stuck into anyone that was representing his community poorly. Do you reckon this one represents the black community poorly?
No, I mean, you've got the projects, but you've got a rich sort of texture to all the characters in it, and there's varying, you know, socioeconomic backgrounds to the African Americans in the film.
Yeah.
Like it, so I mean, it presents a race on, you know, on scale. There's different people doing different things. Sure, the main villain is African American descent.
And wasn't
her
best friend African American?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. And that's that's like a university friend,
She's
doing the research.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. Like, so I don't know. I don't think it's a poor representation of race.
I don't think it's poor representation of race because, and again, the story itself is by and large about, you know, gentrification and the idea of this legacy, like I say, this legacy of violence, what that does to people. And even though when they first get into the projects, they're quite taken aback and they're quite nervous, and then very quickly they're shown kindness. Mm. Very quickly they're shown compassion, you know, and then it's when they, as Caucasian, I would say Caucasian people, who take a step outside of those realms, and she's accused of the murder of the young child, the baby.
Oh, well, she is actually also beaten by a pack of African-American youths when she goes back to the project herself.
Yeah, yes. That's right.
And she's beaten pretty badly.
Yeah.
But she heals very quickly, so
yeah, she does. But yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a poor depiction of African-American culture.
Well, if anything,
it's a damnation on the effects that we have on these kind of communities.
Sure.
And the attitudes and opinions that we have on them on the outset.
I guess it's true. It's easy to have that conversation in retrospect, but I think back then it was a whole different conversation.
Of course, yeah. And this would have been what? This would have been around the time of the LA riots, because that was all happening in 92. So
definitely,
I was going to mention that project though. That the scenes in the projects, they were actually shot there on location
with real
which
gangsters.
Is a good representation,
real gangsters, not as extras,
which is cool because that's like, you know, this time capsule. Yeah. You can see how it looked then.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And of the criticism of the Candyman himself being black, Bernard Rose has said, and you can find this on Google. Why can't a black actor play Freddy Krueger or Hannibal Lecter? And if you're saying that they can't, then that's really perverse. So I think that's a really good...
That's a great quote.
Yeah. Good quote to sum that up on. Yeah, so before we move on to the next film, I want to quickly just have a quick discussion about Bernard Rose's other work. Let's start with Paper House.
Yep.
This is a fantastic, surreal... It is a British film as well.
It is British, yeah.
I don't ever remember anything about this film on theatrical or home entertainment.
I remember the video.
Yeah, I remember the video.
Do you?
It's a really cool cover. It's like a lot of white on the cover with the girl standing like this and a bit of a face.
Yeah, it's something I discovered much later when it hit DVD, and that's where my first introduction was, and I've watched it probably about 4 or 5 times.
It goes for a pretty penny now too, because it's out of print.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
got a tiny little investment.
So I love that one. I think it's an art film, very much so. And then he went on to make stuff like Immortal Beloved, Anna Karenina, Ivan's Ecstasy. There's an interesting one.
That played Muff 1 year too.
Did it really?
Yeah. I saw it was Peter Weller was in the lead.
Yeah.
I saw it at Muff. Yeah.
Mr. Nice, which was that great one with Reese
through
Funks.
Pinnacle a couple of years ago. I haven't seen it yet. I didn't realise it was him.
That was good. And he did The Devil's Violinist, which is, I think, one of the most recent ones, plus a modern adaptation of Frankenstein.
Oh, hang on. He did do that sex tape movie, that found footage one, like
_X tape.
It was terrible, but as bad as it was, it was infinitely better than Sex Tape with that clown from How I Met Your Mother, and I can't even remember who the female lead was.
Wasn't that Cameron Diaz or something?
Yeah, I didn't make it through that, but I made it through this found footage sex tape movie, which is odd to think a guy that's gone from such scale as Candyman toward the end of his career has gone and made a found footage film.
Didn't Bernard Rose also do Gods and Monsters?
No, Bill Condon.
Bill Condon.
Which is connected to the next film.
Yeah, well, that's what,
My child, you doubted me, your own flesh and blood.
So Candyman Farewell to the Flesh, i.e. Part 2, was made in 1995, directed by Bill Condon, who did go on to do Gods and Monsters, Sean. And as well as The Fifth Estate, Twilight's Breaking Dawn films, Dreamgirls. Boom, there's another one.
Weird.
I know, how weird is that? And Beauty and the Beast, of course.
Of course, that was his last one.
The most recent.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
He's got a beautiful aesthetic, Bill Condon, doesn't he?
He does.
So rich.
I think this is a very underrated sequel. Does anyone agree?
Yes and no. I have such a fondness for the first one. And given the credentials, you know, Clive Barker was obviously still involved.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Condon, who's tried and tested, and he's infallible most of the time, I think, you know, even when his films are pretty bad, they're still average, as opposed to bad. I really wanted to like it, and I think it's an almost good sequel.
I think it's a good
and
sequel.
I think it just scrapes by for me, which is all, and I can't count how many times I've seen it. I think I must have seen it about a dozen times at least.
Is it a case of you wanting to like it?
Yeah. Every time I put it on, I want to like it. Like, I want to discover something that I haven't seen before, and I want it to just nudge over the line. I want to walk away from my last screen thinking, ah, I get it now. Now, you know, whatever it is, and I never quite get there.
All right, the story takes place in New Orleans and explores the origins of Candyman. It goes back to how he was killed, and then his family's bloodline ends up with his great-great-great-great-granddaughter, I think it is, played by Kelly Rowan, who was in The Gate. Do you remember the...
Yeah, yeah. She's the older sister. Yeah. She's also in The O.C.
The O.C.
Steven Spielberg's Hook.
Oh, she is as well.
She was in Hook as well. And Michael Culkin returned as Philip Purcell, the urban legend expert who writes a book about the film's first events. I like that tie-in.
Yeah,
that was good.
I thought it was good.
It's a nice little tie-in because he was such an arrogant prick in the first one, and he's still an arrogant prick in this one.
It is a good opener, you're right.
What is it like the first one? He's like, how are you going to debunk my theories?
Yeah, that's right. And Virginia Madsen. Virginia Madsen's just smoking the cigarette. Yeah. Nice
they're,
the thing.
They're all sitting around the table smoking cigarettes. It's so weird inside a restaurant.
Well, there's other things in there that sort of, you know, signs of the time. I love that the husband brings a mobile phone with him and she's like, what's that for? Yeah. And he's like, just in case.
Totally. Now it'd be the opposite.
And then he like bleeps the car and locks it and she goes, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
No shit.
That poor husband.
I know. One thing I found, he's
telling the people to get away from the car. And he's like, hey. And he pushes the buzzer like that. Yeah. Get him away from it. It's like, just like, this is maybe a little bit racist.
Yes. Well, the thing is, like, I found that all the characters in this, right from the start to the finish, were always in a perpetual state of jump scare. Like, they were constantly on edge with jump scares. And this film does rely on them a lot.
Cheaper jump scares. Yes. The first one gets you when you least expect it. It's a very good moment.
Runs under your skin, where this one is jumps. Yeah, you're right.
You're just waiting because you're like, oh, he's going to be back in the room when she walks in. Oh. And then you're like, oh, no, he isn't. He's like,
oh. Which when he does, like, there's a massive throwback to Hellraiser because he says stuff like, you know, you called me, I came.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's straight out of Clive Barker.
Yeah,
like,
that is Clive Barker.
Clive Barker apparently came up with the story for this one, though.
Right. Yeah, from what I understand, he was pretty hands-on.
Yes, and he actually brought Bill Condon to the project. He was the one that said, I want this guy to do it, which is interesting. I don't know where their connection comes from before that or why. What had Bill Condon done earlier? I don't know.
I don't know. And I don't know if it's... Because I only became aware of the relationship when Gods and Monsters came out. And that came out in, what, 97, 98?
Yeah, it was
something
late
like
90s,
that,
yeah.
Late 90s. Oh, I don't know. I don't know what it was. But it was, thank God, is what I say. Okay. Because it's a hell of a working relationship.
So what would you say are the strengths of Candyman 2?
Well, again, I think it tries to get to the same parts as Candyman does, in that it tries to be a deeper film than what it is. And this is, this one's much more clearly, the first one's more about gentrification, I'd say. This one's more about the legacy of violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get the in-depth of Candyman's story. You know, we get that fleshed out a little, no pun intended, we get that fleshed out a little bit more. But then that story is also parallel with Kelly Rowan, her story, with her mom and her dad, and so I think that they're to go back to what I was saying earlier, I think that they're reaching to try and make it a deeper film again, following those footsteps, and I just don't think it never quite gets there.
Yeah. What about you? Does it have any merits for you?
Look, I think it's a nice looking film. It's nowhere near as, distinct as the first one, but like you can tell there's money being spent on it. I think that's what works for me, is that it's easier to watch because I can tell that there was effort behind it, and it was like they tried to do something with it. I just feel like at times it's a bit of a retread at points, and then there's just, I don't know, it feels a little bit predictable, like we discussed with the jump scares and whatnot. But look, it's again, like Sean, I want to like it, and I'm willing to give it a chance because it's actually not, it's not a bad sequel.
It's not horrible.
It's a good stepping stone for a potentially good franchise.
And I like the idea that they try to show you a bit of the mythology of the Candyman. Like they don't explain away all the origin stuff, but they show you a bit. I wish it was a little less hammy.
I was about to say, I find it quite frustrating in these films when they try to show you too much of that stuff. You know, it happened in Nightmare on Elm Street when you get to the whole, Son of a Thousand Maniacs, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Sometimes they can just overdo it because what's best left for the imagination doesn't necessarily work and that's the case here. But
and this is also that you can tell that this is the 3 years have passed between 92 and 95 with this film, that CGI has become a thing. Yeah. You've got that swarm of bees come. Very CGI. And then the finale where he's pretty much shattered to pieces.
Grotesque. And it's like, just so...
It's really kind of disappointing because you're like, if that was done practically and just a little less, it would be so much,
so much more
effective. Yeah. But I guess at the time, people would have been like, that's incredible. I've never seen that before.
Hungry for it too.
Yeah.
I mean, it has its moments. But yeah, it's... You know, it's an okay sequel.
It's an almost there film. What about you? Because you say you quite like it.
I like number twos. It's always me and number twos. Yeah. I never hold it in the same regard as an original when the number two comes along. I like when they, particularly like when they try to do something completely different and new.
Yeah.
Which is why I like Elm Street 2 so much, because it tries to break the mythology. There is no mythology when there's only one. You know, when there's only one film, there's no mythology. So I like it when they try to do something to create a mythology.
Yeah.
This one, though, I guess, did have an inkling of mythology because it already had a backstory. Mm. I like it. It's fun.
Well,
I think
two backstories that it could draw from. You had Candyman's previous with Virginia Madsen, and then also had his story as
That's
well.
True. Yeah, that true. Is very true. I think more I enjoy it for the style over substance kind of effect. You know, I like films that look good. They don't have to have substance if they look good for me.
And that's one of those things.
Lit really well.
Yeah, that's one of those things. Well, anytime you shoot in the quarter, in the French quarter in New Orleans, like, you're guaranteed a beautiful
frame. I really like the location. I like the cast in this one. I think the cast is really good. I think she's really good.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think one of the things that continually surprises me how much I enjoy it is the voiceover from the radio, the DJ.
Yeah, totally.
You know, that guy, you know.
That's like an American,
hey, it's New
American
Orleans.
Graffiti.
And it kind of runs over. And he's just kind of commentating about, you know, this city that's prime to explode, you know. And again, I feel like a better example of that boiling tension of environment would be something like maybe Body Heat. You know, with
William Hurt,
you know, where it's a Kathleen scorching Turner. Hot summer and it just gets hotter and hotter and hotter, and as the temperature goes up, so does their lust for each other, so does the threat of violence goes up. And again, here he's the DJ is commentating on it, but I never quite feel it.
Do the right thing. It's a similar sort of thing too. As the heat creases, so does the racial tension. Yeah. It's moving, and you've got that.
But interestingly, with the location itself, the first film, the buildings were built on the location he was killed. I believe that was the premise.
Correct.
Yeah, but in this one, now we're in New Orleans and...
Yeah, he's just traveling through mirrors.
Yeah.
Chasing, like, yeah. And
following
that was,
the bloodline.
Yeah, well, that was the next thing. Is like following...
Loves those ancestors.
Yeah. When I was watching it, then all I thought was, what's happened to Virginia Madsen? Is she just... Because obviously, I assume that this story takes place a couple of years afterwards. Is she still somewhere else, unreferred to, completely detached from there?
Do they reference her in this one, or was it in the third one they reference her? No, it's in the second.
It's in the second one,
start, when he's talking about, because he's doing his whole lecture thing to sell his book or whatnot. She comes into it, But yeah, what did happen to
her? She's just waiting in those realms for the long awaited follow up.
Yeah, I know, right?
Her story's just waiting to be told. Interesting bit of trivia before we do move on is that Bernard Rose actually wanted to direct number two using Midnight Meat Train as his source material.
Wow.
And have you seen Midnight Meat Train?
I have, I've seen it. It's got Ted Raimi in it.
Yeah,
it does.
Doesn't this one have Ted Raimi
in the first?
In the first one.
He plays at the high school.
Connection then.
Yeah, well, Midnight Meat Train, I think, is a great Clive Barker story in general. I think it's a very good adaptation as well. Would have been interesting with Candyman as the villain instead of a mallet. He's got the hook.
Yeah. But again, then it would be like, okay, why is Candyman just stalking the subway?
Well, this is once again comes down to number two trying to do something different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is actually based on source material by Clive.
True.
Yeah. Well, you know, if he's had his hand in the story.
And Bernard Rose.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's got cred.
That's true.
Which anyway, we'll never
takes
know.
Takes us straight to number three.
Yeah, well, before number three, I want to hear a little bit about what's on our next podcast.
If you're looking for a new Mac product, MResell is the place for you. Don't throw your money away on stupidly expensive Apple gear when MResell provides top-of-the-line, totally refurbished products across the Apple range. Whether you need a new iPhone, iMac, Mac Pro, iPad, or other Apple products, visit MResell. And if you're looking to sell your Apple gear for whatever reason, MResell can offer a generous price with full data erasure, fast payment, and free shipping. Visit MResell's website to see for yourself. FakeShemp.net uses their products, and they wouldn't steer you wrong. Visit MResell.com.au.
Tune in to the next episode of Rewind and Digress, where we track back to 1979 to discuss writer-director David Smoller's vastly underrated, somewhat subversive, and completely unsettling Tourist Trap. It's Mannequin Heaven, baby.
See, my favourite scene's when Davey's pursuing Molly. through the woods, and he's got the severed head of Woody.
Oh yeah.
And he just raises it up and it just goes, like, fucking terrifying moment, because it still fucks with me, because I'm like, is he a ventriloquist?
And don't forget to listen back to our previous episodes where we discuss such classics as Squirm, Basketball, Housebound, and Pet Sematary.
Accept your destiny. Accept your fate. Be my victim.
Which brings us to Candyman, Day of the Dead, a.k.a. number 3, made in 1999 by some guy called Turi Meyer.
Turi Meyer, T-U-R-I. Cool name. Give him that. Like when your director's name is the best thing in the fucking film, like...
Starring... So we know what Sean thinks. Okay, so starring Donna Derrico. Is that how you pronounce it?
Is that the, blonde lead?
This is the Playboy Playmate of the year. Ridiculous. From Baywatch.
Baywatch,
ridiculous.
And also starring Tony Todd, who produced the film. So this film is shit. It's all about boobs. Tits are everywhere. It tells the story of Candyman's great-great-great-great-granddaughter who takes exception to the myth that's been surrounding his legacy, and she wants to celebrate his actual legacy as an artist. So this woman is supposed to be the daughter of Annie, who was the main lead actress in the previous film. And... this is a turd.
It's god awful.
This is the first time I've actually seen it. I avoided it when it came out. So I remember
you saying
back in those days, if there was 4 years between a sequel and the sequel went straight to video, there was signs it was going to be shit.
And was it through Eagle Entertainment?
It was dropped through Eagle. It was dropped through Eagle.
That's what I watched. The Eagle DVD.
Shit that not even a studio would pick it up for home rent in that era.
Yeah,
when, you know, video still rented.
Yeah,
but yeah. This was the first time I've seen this. I watched on the DVD that came out sometime later through Sony when they licensed the Lionsgate catalog.
Oh yeah, because it dropped again and it was re-rated, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think it might be
dropped an M or something. Yeah. It dropped as an MA, but I think
I picked it up for $1 at Cashies. I think it goes for about
Day of the Dead
20-30 on eBay. So I'll probably
resell it,
but then I kind of want to keep it because
I was gonna say like that's the only one that I don't have. So if you want to flog it off,
we've got a sale. what a hard watch. I mean, like I did cram these three films in the space of a week, and the first one's always a pleasure to revisit. I was looking at for this 4K release of the first one, that's coming out later in the year, but I was happy to revisit because I will rewatch it and appreciate the quality.
Yeah, of course.
And then the second one, I was like, yet again, hoping for bigger, better things. And then the third one, I could tell in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It was in for a fucking...
But why go back and tell his backstory again?
Again, and it's worse this time. They really, really smother him in honey in this one. It's like this wasp attack him in this one.
And then you get this really bad digital effect of the bees all coming through the bloody city. Yeah. Is it through the new the LA River?
Something like that. I mean, it's completely devoid of anything, this sequel. Like, it's devoid
of the poster art. That's kind of cool.
The poster art is cool.
I like that.
It's a throwback.
Yeah, but it's good. It's directed with no class.
The director, right? I looked up his filmography. He hasn't done a great deal, but he
produces a lot of television.
Screenwrite chairman of the board with Carrot Top. I was like, how did they trust this guy to make the movie?
But he's produced a lot of stuff like Salem and Smallville and Witches of Weird.
Yeah, a lot of West End as well. Yeah.
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 And but Philip Glass' score is sorely missed as well.
Yeah.
Like that. And it goes to show you just how powerful and what an effect that score has on the first two films. Because when it's not there, it's you feel it. Like it's devoid of atmosphere.
Absolutely.
It's devoid of cinematography. Just is everything super lit.
It's so flat. Yeah. Like
it's television. It's television.
Absolutely.
And even, that kind of bizarre echo rumble over the voice of Tony Todd.
Yeah.
That's gone. He's basically just doing this kind of like loud.
Very
whisper,
disappointing because he should own this character by now and know it back to front. And
wasn't he on record as saying that he only did it for the money?
Really?
I'm pretty sure he's on record saying...
I mean, that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, he's like he doesn't care anything for it and he only did it for the paycheck.
That's disappointing.
Yeah, but I kind of admire the candor as well, the honesty. Oh, of course. Like it's...
Well, here's something Clive Barker had to say about it. Once again, going to his website, you can get all his quotes.
This will be good.
It's not as bad as you would think.
What?
Yeah,
really?
This was.
Really?
He was asked about it before it got released, but after it was made. So he'd obviously been given a screener. And he just said, Candyman 3, which I had nothing to do with, was shown to me a couple of weeks ago. I declined to put my name on it. I really don't think I contributed anything to its creation, and it seems entirely phony to plunk your name on it, take the money, and then run. I didn't think it was badly created. I just don't think it had anything to do with the mythology I created. And I would have felt like a big old fake. So that's what he had to say about that.
Fair call.
Yeah.
Fair call.
But he doesn't like say the movie sucks. I guess he doesn't want to, you know, ahead of release, you know, drag these guys down.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
Let the audience decide for themselves. But yeah.
It's just...
I can't really think of one super positive thing to say about it.
No, no, they can have.
I could normally go, oh, you know, the nudity wasn't bad, but it was just ridiculous.
Yeah. What do you think about, say it was a good production, what do you think about the connection being that this is the daughter from the previous film?
Ridiculous.
Tenuous at best.
And then this is, like I said, the second one was a somewhat retread. This is a complete retread. And like, there was 3 years, 4 years between these films. Yeah. It's outrageous.
Yeah.
Yeah. How dim do you think we are? But there's zero character in it.
Yeah.
Like, period. Mm. Like, and I remember it struck me the most when Donna Derrick was in the back of the cop car, and then, you know, she has a little, you know, biff boff with a copper, and then she escapes, she runs away. And I was sitting watching, I'm thinking, there has been nothing in the last hour of this film to give me any inclination she has enough nerve and or nous to do a jailbreak. Like,
yeah, totally.
All of a sudden, now she's jailbreak queen. Like, you know, she's just getting away from cops. Like, it's just, and that was when I sort of stopped and I thought, what else is there in the fit? Like, and it's just once you pull that little thread of, you know, that just attacks the credit of a film, you can just keep going and pulling that thread until the entire jumper falls to pieces. Like, and that's exactly what happened. It's just, for somebody who adores the first film so much, it is gut wrenching to watch part three.
Well, I think we should hammer that nail in number three right there and then.
There you go.
And quickly talk about Candyman 4, which never came to fruition but had been attempted many times.
Yes.
Which is interesting. And my favorite story is that Bernard Rose actually wanted to make his own sequel to his own film. So a sequel to the first one.
Yeah.
With Tony Todd and Virginia Madsen returning. There's no real way to validate the integrity of that report or whatever, but that would be very cool. To have a direct sequel that kind of ignores number two and three. I don't like it when sequels ignore previous
I'm down for it though.
But yeah, this one, this one is this one's okay because they could both be theatrical, ignore the director video stuff.
Yeah.
Was number two theatrical?
Number two was theatrical, yeah.
I didn't think it went to theaters here in Australia, but it was theatrical in the US.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it never came to be. What was the other one? There was a story that it was going to take place back in an all-girls school in England as well, with the Candyman running amok there. Turns him into a boogeyman then, like a real slasher character.
I agree. And it, you don't want it to be like this kind of... I mean, it is, as it stands, the law of diminishing returns. But you certainly don't want him to get to the point of say, you know, Pinhead or Freddy, where he just stops being even remotely terrifying and becomes cartoonish. And taking him to England, you know, is that, you know, like, how did he get there?
I've got one better. I don't know if this is there because I don't know if this is common knowledge on the internet, but I learned it recently watching an interview with Tony Todd on the Candyman Fell Out of the Flesh Blu-ray. And it's
have
a
you got
point,
that?
The Ooh. Scream Factory release. It's got an interview with Tony Todd and I think maybe a commentary.
Oh, yes.
Maybe. But the interview with Tony Todd, it's a terribly produced interview. Like, oh, it breaks my heart. It's horrible. It's really badly produced. But... regardless, one of the little bits of tidbits that comes out of his mouth was when Lionsgate, or might have been Artisan at the time, acquired the franchise, which was with the third film, they also acquired, you know, a few other franchises. You know,
Wishmaster and...
Leprechaun.
Oh, right,
and,
yes.
And apparently they pitched it to him, a Candyman versus Leprechaun movie.
No.
Right.
And he just went, I knew that was time to get out of the franchise. When they started talking about doing things like that, I was like,
is it number three wasn't time to get out of the franchise?
Yeah. Why? Well, <know, right>?
Like, that sounds...
I guess a paycheck's a paycheck, but he's like...
Yeah, that sounds far more entertaining.
He said maybe if it was like Candyman versus Leprechaun in the hood, maybe.
Candyman versus Leprechaun in space. Who would you cast as Candyman now? Like, if it gets the if it was to get the reboot, if it was to get part four,
Idris Elba.
Yeah, I was about to say Idris Elba.
He wouldn't do it. But I think he's such a good actor,
he's got the build.
Yeah, he's intimidating.
I don't know,
but he's also kind of likable.
Let's give Eddie Murphy another crack.
I know, right?
Well, he needs to do something because God knows he's not doing Beverly Hills Cop 4.
What about your man? I can never pronounce his name. Shitwell Elijah Farr or whatever his name is.
Yeah, I'd give it to him.
I reckon he's got it. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. What about the...
Don Cheadle. No.
The skinny guy from Captain Phillips.
Yeah.
I'm the captain now.
With the hook.
Yeah.
Captain Hook. Ah, oh, shit.
I'm down for that.
Oh, there you go. God. Oh, let's
will they do it? Has there been talk of a reboot?
Apparently the ownership's been to and fro between different people. So I think
Tony. Yeah, I think I read that from Tony.
So many franchises like that, isn't there? Highlander, Hellraiser,
yeah.
Candyman. Like they're
one
all
producer's
in that.
Got some rights here.
The Crow.
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Crow production is just shut
Tony
down.
Tony Todd, the Crow. He was in the Crow.
He was as well, but the new Crow with Jason Momoa is just shut
away.
Down. Yeah.
Well, that's been shut down.
Yeah. Done.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Silly.
One interesting tidbit before we move on and wrap this up is that one of the defining differences that I didn't mention before from the book to this was that the say his name five times thing was never in the original story. So yeah. that's interesting that they put that into the film, because that's really the crux of the mythos, isn't it?
Yeah,
totally.
So that's all I have to say about that.
What's, yeah. What's of the three, I am genuinely curious, you know, what is your favorite bit? Or, you know, what is your favorite aspect of the trilogy?
For me, it's the blood of number one. Like, it's just...
The blood. Specifically
the blood, because when I think of it from when I first watched it on VHS, all my mind goes to those scenes of just absolute blood all over the walls and shit like that.
Yeah. That's pretty, yeah.
I just love the look of that. That's the only vision that really comes to my head when I think of it.
The cinematography of the first, like, there's so many... It's a really great looking movie. Like, I mean, there's this overhead shots that have no place being in a horror film, like that you could achieve with a drone these days, but clearly back then they were shooting it from like
helicopter
shots,
yeah,
over the projects. And they're like simple things like that that are just segue into the scene that usually aren't in these type of movies, particularly in this era.
Yeah,
and that just blew me away. That's what sets it apart from, I mean, there's a lot of elements that set it apart, sure, but that is the thing that really stood out to me. I'm like, this is a handsome looking movie.
Yeah, yeah. And he doesn't rush it either. Like, he's got no problem slapping like a, you know, like an 18mm on and just letting it play out.
Let the camera
like,
sit
yeah,
there.
Just
like you have the toilet block sort of sequence where the kids walk out and it's like just a static shot there for a point in time. You see all the characters sort of funnel out. You realize she's not coming out. And it's like,
that is in the book. That is the turning point of the book, and then it pretty much concludes not long after that, where they accuse her of it and they burn her on the bonfire.
Yeah,
and that's the end of it. Which the end of the book, actually, if you've read Clive Barker, is very similar to sort of Hellbound Heart and Damnation Game. It's got that gritty Clive Barker-esque thing about it, which I would love to see a sequel with Harry come back. You know, Detective Harry from what's it, Lord of Illusions and
Harry Dunmore.
He would suit this franchise very well if he was investigating the whole Candyman thing.
I think it's Virginia Madsen. I think she's the best thing in the trilogy. Mm. And again, I think Virginia Madsen's one of those ones, because at the time she was hot property.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like she was, you know, she'd done this and she'd done Blue Tiger and she'd done Highlander and you know, she was and I always feel like she got an Oscar nom once.
Well, she
for
recently came back
Sideways.
Yes, and she played the mother in Joy.
She did. It's true.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Phenomenal in that. Yeah. She was really good.
You know what? I didn't even realize that was her.
Yeah.
I think back
and she's
in
Designated Survivor as the
she is
adversary.
But I haven't watched that yet.
Is that a TV series?
Yeah.
Kiefer Sutherland. She's great in it.
She's so good. Yeah. She's so good. And I think, she's giving a performance, you know, well above and beyond the call of a horror film in Candyman. I think, yeah. Virginia Madsen for president, I say.
Well, not if Kiefer has anything to do with it. That's it. Thanks, guys. That was Candyman. Awesome. Love to revisit this one. Maybe not number three, but you can all go and judge for yourself.
Yeah, I know.
Totally.
Until next time, see you later.
Ciao.
I use a quote from Hamlet in the story Sweets to the Sweet. In England, we have golden syrup. The makers of this syrup put on their can a partially rotted corpse of a lion with bees flying around it. The quote that's at the bottom is, "From the strong shall come sweetness." I like the idea that there be something perversely sweet about the monstrous.